Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. That certainly took long enough, didn't it? It is 28 minutes before the hour. We are 32 minutes late starting the program this evening. My sincere apologies for that. I think we just had computer problems that were probably related to what happened Tuesday night. And for those of you who actually are getting to listen now and might actually get to listen to the podcast later, what happened Tuesday night was that, midway into the program, the power blinked, went out for several seconds, and then it eventually went out completely and did not come back on until like 4 o'clock in the morning, when the temperature outside was, of course, zero. And in the course of all that, we found out that we had a failed uninterruptible power supply. And so when the power blinked, it took down a computer. It took down the streaming computer where the program is recorded, and so there was no recording of the program to upload, even a partial piece of it. And so since I didn't do anything last night because we were over doing the poetry, prose, and plain song broadcast at Secret Sandwich Society. I started everything up, and I thought everything was okay, and then it wasn't. Oh, well, these are the adventures and vicissitudes of independent broadcasting. But I can announce happily that we're pretty much okay, thanks to subscribers, thanks to the members of the not quite Horn 100 so far. We are in, we've got about $300 to raise this evening. And that's not terrible, considering what happened, Tuesday. And I'm personally grateful for the fact that through the, solid wood, got to have solid wood here. There, that's solid wood, knocking wood, banging on the wood. The antiquated, highly expensive, ridiculous, busted, broken down, falling apart coal-fired grid maintained by Appalachian Power at least managed not to destroy any equipment this time. So we're keeping fingers crossed, but I have no idea what the problem with the computer was. I'm happy that it's working. Letting everything go. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Good little group gathering together in the chat room. Good evening, Anatole. Good evening, Truth Seeker. And, of course, capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderators Lottie and Sparky. And there's Kathy wandering in. More will be here presently if they didn't already come in and go out and go, where the hell's Bob? And it, right. Whew. Just to let you know, if you didn't get to watch or listen, last night was a lot of fun. Last night was a lot of fun over at Secret Sandwich Society, watching very, very talented people come out and create an artistic space where one did not necessarily exist. We're not going to do this every time, but, you know, maybe once a month or once every couple of months, go over and do that because, well, let me try to explain that. There is a lot, and if you're a regular listener to this program, and most of you are, there's a lot wrong with the state of West Virginia. Probably too lengthy a list to even try to mention in a brief period of time. Exactly, Gerald. Gerald points out, the power went out, huh? Thanks, Obama. Yeah. And if he didn't have his war on coal and didn't tell all them little Keebler coal elves to stop making the holy, blessed, sacred coal down under the earth, it'd all be barren skittles right here in West Virginia, even though most West Virginians don't even know, they ain't got a clue what a skittle is, except for they think it's them little packages of candy that you can buy at the store, and if you happen to be a young black man, you can get shot for carrying them. But it ain't about race. Right. No, there's a lot wrong with the state of West Virginia. And the things that are right about this state, I want to celebrate. And help that be the future instead of all the stuff that's wrong. And so when something like poetry, prose, and plain song happens over at Secret Sandwich, well, I thought it would be a neat idea to see if we could broadcast it and make it, you know, sort of point out that there really is a community there. And it's a community of goodwill and fun and considerable creativity. And so that was the impetus behind doing this, and I want to thank Lewis and Darlene for buying into the idea. I mean, not buying by any stretch of the imagination, but in sharing that idea. And so maybe in the future, if they've got somebody performing there. They can, because I set everything up for them, we can go over there, you know, maybe on a Saturday night or something and do live from the Grove just to show the positive face of this otherwise beaten up, bedraggled, put upon, often disastrous, little enclave in the hills. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful state. There are places that are just breathtakingly gorgeous. And in a couple of miles, you can be on top of a hellscape where people are, you know, where in communities where people are routinely poisoned because coal company executives haven't yet figured out that you can't put a U-Haul behind a hearse. And so they constantly try to accumulate more and more and more and more wealth. And they do so by extracting it from the communities around them. So that was why I thought it important to go and share all of that. And like I said, it was a lot of fun. And I hope I hope those of you who watched or listened enjoyed it as well. Well, I mean, I know one person didn't. But, you can't please everybody. So that's the last couple of days in a nutshell. And, yeah, we missed prayer meeting Wednesday last night, but sometimes just getting out of the filth, it's cleansing. And pleasant, even. But we're right back at it. Because this here is Thorn in the Side Thursday. And I love I love this one particular story. Saw it earlier today. And it's kind of nondescript until you start thinking about it. The story comes from the Oregonian. And Les Zaitz, who is a senior investigative reporter with the Oregonian and Oregon Live, said the FBI opens talks with Ammon Bundy, starting with lengthy phone call. Well, okay then. Here's the thing, though. They've opened talks with Ammon Bundy. Talks. Chats. A little tête-à-tête. A conversation. Mr. Zaitz reports that 2 days ago, the FBI opened a conversation and they're talking now. Isn't that sweet? Isn't it just lovely? Doesn't it just give you hope for the future? The FBI is talking with people who committed sedition and arguably treason. But they're talking, just talking. Maybe they'll play a few hands of pinochle. They're talking. Instead of going in and arresting these thugs. There was a community meeting on Tuesday in Burns, and I watched some of it. And I saw the gymnasium there at the high school where they had the meeting, and I thought about how for years and years and years that's probably been the scene of volleyball matches and basketball games and things where the community got together and cheered on the local young athletes, win or lose. And that's what that gymnasium was for. But now, it's for the purpose of having community meetings where people from the community get together and beg. And in the case of the Tuesday meeting, Ammonium Bundy actually showed up with some of his other thugs. And so, looking at him, the community begged him to get the hell out of their community, which he is not part of and where he has no business. A man named Ed Brown stood up and said, "Mr. Bundy, I agree with you 100%. We have way too much government. But by the same hand, get the hell out of my yard. Look what you did to this county." And I don't know how I feel about this "we have too much government" nonsense. I don't think we have enough. Because we don't have health care for every American who needs it. We don't have child nutrition. We don't have food supplementation for every child who needs it. Is there any way to countenance or find acceptable the notion that somewhere on the order of 25% of American children go to bed hungry at some point in time during any given week? Now, granted, we've come up with a nice Orwellian phrase for it. We call it food insecurity, because that sounds so much more sterile than, well, let's see, hunger. Yeah, see, hunger just sounds mean and scary. Whereas food insecurity sounds like something that may very well have little Tinkerbells flying around it. Yeah, food insecurity, you know, that's when the kid gets ramen noodles instead of, you know, Chateaubriand. Food insecurity. So we apparently don't have a government that's big enough to help keep children fed in this country. We don't have a government that's big enough to keep people, you know, veterans even, from dying in killing cold this time of year or from being homeless at all. Our government's not big enough to prevent veterans from committing suicide in record numbers. Our government isn't big enough to prevent preventable disease. Our government isn't big enough to prevent statistical excess deaths for want of health care or perhaps from exposure to various and sundry extractive industries. Hello, mountaintop removal. Gerald notes with regard to the fact that the Ammonium Bundy and the seditionists and the FBI are talking. Gerald says, well, at least they're talking. I sure hope they can get some counseling and work things out. You know, for the sake of the kids. Right. But they're talking. Governor Kate Brown of Oregon described the occupation, otherwise known as sedition, as a spectacle of lawlessness. She said, this situation is absolutely intolerable, and it must be resolved immediately. The very fabric of the community is being ripped apart. And I'm guessing that Burns, Oregon, really doesn't have the $100,000 a day that the common clay of the New West, you know, morons, are costing it. And since they're a bunch of layabout deadbeats who won't get jobs anyway, they can't pay it either. But the community sat there and begged them to leave, and they won't. And apparently in the conversation that Ammonium Bundy had with whoever it was at the FBI, he said that suddenly the community is now in favor of the seditious thugs. As Vince points out, apparently we do not have a big enough government to keep kids from his hometown in Michigan from drinking lead-poisoned water. So, you know, the next time I hear the word... And look, I don't hang around with Republicans, so I don't really have to worry about this. But honest to God, I can't tolerate that big government. I can't stand it anymore. It just sends me around the bend. Drives me absolutely batty. Because apparently, you know, this stems from the fact that the people who control the government, and particularly the Congress and the Supreme Court, well, they don't believe in having a government in the first place. Any government is too much government to a birther, deather, ninther, tenther, bagger, bircher, booger eater, Republican, libertarian, what have you. Any government. They want the anarchy of Ayn Randian-styled capitalism. Plain and simple. Kelly Gneiting, I don't know what you do with it, G-N-E-I-T-I-N-G. I got no idea what you do with it. Gneiting, Gneiting, GNU, Gestad, I don't Kelly said, God wants us here. There's a sense that's beckoning, and it comes from heaven.
we're doing what's right. We're going to do what the founding fathers would do because we were inspired by God also. This person is apparently almost too stupid to breathe in and breathe out again without a reminder. Kelly, if you're getting some beckoning from heaven, go there. Hey, no, none of us will miss you. And of course, as we talked about the other night, Lavoy Thinkum has lost his $110,000 plus a year foster care gig because he's busy occupying because of the beckoning from heaven. This knighting character, that good night. He thinks the founding fathers would occupy a bird sanctuary? God damn bluebirds. Yeah. Gerald pointing out that Governor Brown is the governor. She is the governor. I mean, she could probably facilitate something about it, just saying. And remember, there's going to be another one of these. Oh, yes. They're already planning it. There's going to be another one of these, and it'll probably start as soon as they load up their little clown cars and drive away from all the damage that they've done there at the bird sanctuary. Because, remember, they've torn down fences, they've ransacked offices. And they really think they're going to scare the government, we the people, you know, into just giving up and saying, well, you know, screw that bird sanctuary. And you know what? You know what just kind of chaps my butt? We might do, we the people, exactly that. Remember, there's still been no punishment, no accountability, no nothing for Cloven Bundy. He's walking around free as a bird, and he's still grazing his deadbeat grazing his cattle on public land that belongs to we the people. Still won't pay his bill. Still fomented a seditious movement in which snipers took dead aim at Bureau of Land Management authorities. Nothing. And then, of course, there is she who we try to keep nameless. Godzilla from Wasilla, Caribou Barbie, Mussolini, whom Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, calls the Tundra Twunt. He's Sarah Palin. With her formal endorsement. We talked about this briefly on the program Tuesday, but of course it's disappeared into the ether. Sarah Palin with her endorsement of T-Rump. And some of the best authentic frontier gibberish I have ever in my life heard. Just mind-blowing. Trying to see if I can, if you weren't listening Tuesday, you don't know. I've got a terrible earworm of the little skeevy girls singing their freedom song. Songs of Freedom. No, not like that. But you have by now surely to goodness
heard that word salad. I posted it to my Facebook page, and gun clinging, what? It's astonishing in its stupidity. You watch it once, and you can just feel the little brain cells, not dying, but committing suicide inside your own skull. Too bad, Marty. Marty said, please, no Sarah Palin audio. No Sarah Palin audio. But how can we not? Huh? I mean, it's just a little, it was just captured on a vine. And why do I not have audio? Well, like I told you, we had some computer problems. Right-winging, bitter-clinging, proud clingers of our guns, our God, and our religions, and our... And Agnes caught me. Just sitting there with my head bobbing. Right-winging, bitter-clinging, gun... It's poison. It's pure poison. And of course, T-Rump promised her a cabinet post. I've suggested Secretary of Derp. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's lots of possibilities. But no, really, can you imagine that woman being given any? I mean, because really, see, the way our government works, you know, the one that's too big, is that any cabinet post has the potential for the person occupying it to do real damage. I mean, I am absolutely certain that that Godzilla from Wasilla would love to be the Secretary of the Interior. Now, she'd really love to be Secretary of Defense, or maybe... Can you ponder that for a minute? Will your brain let you do that? Can you imagine for a minute Sarah Palin as Secretary of State? Are we hooting yet? Have you chewed right through the hockey puck at the mere ponderance of that moment? Just say that, say it out loud. Don't say it three times. It might be like Beetlejuice. But just say that out loud, like I did a minute ago. You have no idea. I'm actually lashed into the broadcast chair here, because otherwise merely saying it, it makes you want to run screaming into the frigid night. Say it with me. You can do this. Secretary of State, Sarah Palin. That's twice I've said it now. I dare not say it a third time. Asa with a note says, come on, Bob. Word salad is too goddamn dignified for Tundra Twunt. It was pure verbal diarrhea. Oh, Carol, your term has been adopted. I don't know if there are royalties involved. Ay. Well, we've got one vote courtesy of Gerald for Secretary of Derp. And yes, by the way, we did mention on Tuesday the fact that on the same day that she was endorsing T-Rump, her son, what's his name, Pole Vault, got arrested for domestic violence. And yes, no kidding, she turned around and blamed Barack Obama for the fact that her son apparently can't hold his meth. It's because Barack Obama doesn't care about our veterans. No, really.
No.
Screaming. Yeah. And meanwhile, just 1 second here. I was pleased to see that that President Obama has actually said something about the Flint water disaster. It's encouraging. I won't say I was surprised, but I was. Yeah, I was, in fact, pleased. Now, of course, this means that the usual suspects will scream, I don't know, that he's trying to turn the children of Flint, whose minds have been ruined by lead, into a zombie army of Obamaniacs. Oh, Jesus. But you know that. Mm-hmm. But he did. He mentioned the Flint crisis. He was interviewed on CBS yesterday and described the dearth of information, or perhaps the cover-up of vital information to families whose children were being poisoned, and entire families were poisoned, thousands and thousands and thousands of, yes. He described it as inexplicable and inexcusable that people in Flint were not immediately told that the water there in Flint is poison. The full quote is, "What is inexplicable and inexcusable is once people figured out that there was a problem there and that there was lead in the water, the notion that immediately families weren't notified, things weren't shut down. This shouldn't happen anywhere." Of course, it happens all over the place. Oh, half-track Palin. That's right, yeah. Okay, I can't keep up with them. Most of them, you know, the girls are named after various forms of liquor that she was drinking the night she got pregnant. Yeah. But it is inexplicable, and more in particularly, it's inexcusable. And gosh, Mr. President, it would have been nice if you would have said it is also criminal. But no. And it shouldn't happen anywhere. But here's the next question. What are we, the people, going to do to fix it? Because sitting, and you know, this is how, I would hope that this is how, as progressives, we respond to this sort of a thing. It doesn't matter if you're in California or Oregon or Texas or Massachusetts or me sitting here in West Virginia. How are we going to fix Flint? How are we going to make sure that not another child ever drinks poison? Here's a crazy idea. What if, I know, you don't legislate with the Congress you want. You legislate with the Congress you want. You wish you had. Something. Goddamn Rumsfeld. You don't legislate with the Congress that you get, whatever. So this is probably just pipe dream stuff. And for those political pragmatist realists out there that keep telling me that there's something wrong with me for supporting Bernie Sanders, well, I'm, yeah, okay. But what if, could we have a constitutional amendment that declares that clean, safe drinking water is a basic human right? Or that it's a constitutional right. I mean, we've got a right to keep and bear arms. Can we not have a constitutional right to clean drinking water? Because, see, we've got things like the Clean Water Act, and that's a full-on, no kidding, sure enough, by golly, law. And there's another one called the Safe Drinking Water Act. But it somehow or another didn't manage to stop some Republican emergency managers in Michigan from poisoning several thousand human beings in the tens of thousands. How do you fix this problem? We asked this question repeatedly 2 years ago in relation to what was going on here in West Virginia. How do you fix this problem? You've pretty much got to replumb every home that has any sort of, and you've got to get rid of every bit of lead in any part of the water supply, right down to the tap, the spigot, the faucet, the supply lines, what have you. And no, a couple of million dollars thrown at it ain't going to fix that. Just like actually repairing what went wrong in West Virginia would have cost billions of dollars. And listen, there's no Republican out there who thinks that ordinary people, ordinary Americans, are worth billions of dollars to protect. Now we can goddamn sure tell a woman what she can how she can deal manage her body if it happens to have a precious little fetus in it, and we can spend trillions of dollars on war, but to actually spend the necessary money to make sure that the water that gets talked about in the Safe Drinking Water Act, that's a reality? Nah, fuck no. And as Carol points out, 11 months ago we learned hundreds of thousands of gallons of fracking fluid was dumped into the California aquifer. We poison people all the time. Clean drinking water has been a human right since 1948, according to the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights. Of course, we never really signed on to that now, did we, huh? Mm-mm. They poisoned West Virginia, Carol says, by the millions. Nobody paid for that. And that's why I asked the question. Do we have any progressive heroes who can introduce... And I realize this is symbolic stuff, but we need rallying cries. It'd be nice if there was somebody doing progressive stuff in the Senate besides Bernie Sanders. How about a constitutional amendment declaring that it is an absolute right of every American to have clean drinking water? A constitutional right. Every bit as valid and viable as the right to a shooting gun. Huh? Oh, I know. It's impossible, right? But it's impossible. It stays impossible. It stays impossible as long as we don't try to achieve it. And then, Porter Ranch. 2,000 families displaced. When do they get to go home? I can't tell you how many communities have simply been erased from the earth in West Virginia.
places that used to be places, little communities like Twilight that are just ghost towns.
I don't know. It's 11 minutes after the hour. We're going to take a we'll take our break. It being Thursday, we have the Green News Report from Brad and Desi. And after that, phone lines will be open. Area code 304-574-8178. Or the stress line, area code 304-663-HORN. For some people, it works great. For some people, it doesn't. Go figure. And, of course, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn. Sparky tells me the Porter Ranch folks will get to go home sometime in March. Assuming, of course, that they get that, you know, that whole toxic methane leak thing. Well, natural gas, I'm sorry. Fixed. And, okay, they relocated 2,000 people. How many people have been poisoned? How many people won't know until they're sitting at the doctor's office 20 years from now and they say, you've got cancer? Why? Well, because that's just what kills. That's what kills Americans. You know, if you didn't know better, you'd almost think there was a constitutional right to cancer, wouldn't you? Well, the way we treat corporations and the way corporations put the stuff into the environment that leads to the cancer. Yeah, we kind of do have a constitutional. If it's not a right, it's an obligation, like a constitutional obligation. Cancer, yeah. So, as I noted previously, we need to raise about $300 this evening. 10 at 30, 30 at 10. 20 at 15, 40 at 750. Not going to go any further than that. We can probably do it. Hope we can. And thanks again to subscribers like Joan, who, with the subscription, help keep the hole from getting quite so deep. Mm-hmm. So, break time. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
It's Thursday, January 21, 2016.
2015 was by far the warmest year in the record, beating 2014, which was the previous record.
Surprise! 2015 was the hottest year ever recorded on planet Earth.
I'm sorry, most of all, that I let you down. You deserve better.
Michigan Governor Rick Snyder apologizes and promises action for the lead-poisoned residents of Flint. Denmark sets a new world wind power record. Plus,
a rough start for the year for crude oil by all accounts.
More bad news for big oil.
All of that bad news and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
A North Carolina town banned solar farms after residents argue that solar panels might cause cancer. You know what else might cause cancer? The 200 billion cigarettes North Carolina produces each year.
Oh, yeah, there's that. A real danger. So let's ban solar instead. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, very, very good news this weekend for climate change deniers.
Oh, you mean that gigantic snowstorm that's
correct.
About to smack
yeah.
the East Coast?
Yes, absolutely. A huge storm coming into the East Coast. Tons of snow. I can already see Fox News and their snarky comments about what global warming? Look at all the snow outside.
They're so predictable.
They are, except when it comes to things that can actually be predicted, like 2015 being the hottest year ever recorded on planet Earth. But before we get to that and a bunch of other news stories, you have a correction to
yes,
make.
A very quick correction. In our last report, I inaccurately said President Obama's pause in the federal mine lease program applied to coal and oil, but the review applies only to new coal leases, not to oil and gas, at least not yet.
At least not yet. Thank you for making that correction. And now on to the planet's top story.
2015 was the hottest year in recorded history since record-keeping began in the 1880s. That's according to new data released by both NASA and NOAA. The new record breaks the previous record set just last year by a large margin, the widest margin on record. So that means that 2015 set the record for setting records.
It was a record.
Yes, and surprisingly, the El Nino weather event in the Pacific wasn't necessary to get there, according to Gavin Schmidt, NASA's chief scientist.
2015 was the warmest year because it was warm throughout the year. And even though it's kind of picking up that El Nino assist in the last 3 months, even without El Nino, this would have been the warmest year on record.
Schmidt also said that 2016 is shaping up to also be extremely warm and could possibly break the 2015 record.
That would be 3 years in a row of the hottest years ever recorded. That would be unprecedented in human history.
That's right.
Well, not that we've been warning everybody about that for, what, 6 or 7 years now?
Michigan's Republican Governor Rick Snyder, once a rising star in the Republican Party, apologized again in his State of the State speech on Tuesday for his administration's failure to deal with the water lead contamination crisis in Flint, Michigan.
To you, the people of Flint, I say tonight, as I have before, I am sorry and I will fix it. No citizen of this great state should endure this kind of catastrophe. Government failed you. Federal, state, and local leaders, by breaking the trust you placed in us.
Among a number of actions, Snyder promised to mobilize $28 million in new state funding for emergency water distribution, repairs, and medical monitoring. Long term, he pledged to repair Flint's now ruined water infrastructure and address long-term health and neurological impacts of lead exposure on Flint's children. Snyder conceded that his administration mishandled the crisis in which Flint residents drank and bathed in water dangerously contaminated with lead for more than a year before officials finally took action. But it is important to note that unlike what Governor Snyder said, local leaders were not at fault. The water crisis was caused by an unelected emergency manager appointed by Governor Snyder who switched Flint's water source to cut costs.
Has Rick Snyder resigned yet?
No, he has not.
Just asking.
Bad news for big oil. California Attorney General Kamala Harris is now investigating oil giant ExxonMobil over whether the company lied to investors and the public about the risks to its business from climate change in the wake of published reports revealing Exxon executives were warned as early as 1977 that burning fossil fuels would cause dangerous global warming, but instead they spent millions denying that fact for decades. Global oil prices continue to slide, closing below $28 a barrel, the lowest since 2003. Oil has fallen more than 25% so far this year amid a global oil supply glut, which has severely impacted markets. Finally, New York State Governor Andrew Cuomo announced that New York will eliminate coal as a source of electricity in the state by 2020. And Denmark does it again. Denmark set a new world wind power record, generating more than 40% of its total electricity demand for the year from clean wind power over 2015.
Way to go, Denmark. Way to go, New York. For much more on all of the stories we covered today and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Everyone knows it's windy. And windy has stormy.
Oh, dear God, that'll earworm in a minute. 24 minutes past the hour. This is the horn for Thorn in the Side Thursday. And we'll be going right to the phones here just in a sec. A couple of emails. Subject line from Steve in China on taps. Steve says, it's easy to see how a progressive idea like FEMA is turned into a worthless political tool on a regular basis through abuse, misuse, and plain old-fashioned non-use. Doesn't a disaster like Flint constitute a matter of emergency management? Oh, right. That would require something like the even older concept of state and regional emergency response, environmental hazard control, clean water and purity standards, etc. Personally, I believe this is what happens when you get a Department of Homeland Security anyway, instead of old-fashioned heartland and fruited plain bullshit. Priorities, people. Priorities. Regards, Steve in China. And Roger up in Oregon, with regard to that Kelly whoever person, said, Bob, the G is silent, just like they'd like the big G in government to be. Ooh, that's nice. Nicely done. Godzilla from Wasilla, Secretary of Dirt for what? The war on farming? How about the kind that sounds like Secretary of Dearth? And Roger adds, cynical me thinks this new Obama, who is doing a very good imitation of who he thought he would be starting in January 2009, will evaporate once the TPP comes up for a vote next month. I don't know. There's something about short time, and some people will just mail it in. And others will say, hey, I'm free. I'm gonna say what's on my mind. So, I don't know. Let's run over to the Skype line where Thomas has been waiting. Hey, Thomas.
Hey, Bob. I have a thorn. A really big, gaping Flint River-sized thorn.
Yeah. Ow! Yeah, one of those?
Yes. I've been self-imposed exile for 2 days from my show, since RTEC, reset the server, and I pretty much had a little minor meltdown, but...
I gathered as much.
my audience...
I could hear the Yosemite Sam swearing from here. Not yeah. Paul Frezel, Eckenbert, Clarkin...
Yeah. But the good news is we're back, and very happy to carry you and Nicole Sandler and Tom Hartman and everybody we carry, because you guys provide me sanity during this. What Rick, let me call him by his proper name. One Tough Douche, our esteemed governor.
Oh, nice, nice. I like that.
Yes, our esteemed governor who doesn't use a teleprompter. And, you know, says what he means and means what he says because he's a Tea Party loving Veep possibility candidate. That's what he was talked about as when the election started. I want everybody to remember that. Tea Party possibility candidate because he was from Michigan. And it's a blue state. And he won it. We're actually a purple state. He poisoned women, children, men, animals. We forget about the animals that this man poisoned that drank that water. That we don't even know the amounts of animals. If you're a pet lover and if you maybe contribute to PETA, you should be enraged at this man. This man caused this. This man has not resigned. Somebody from the EPA is going to resign tonight. I saw it on Huffington Post, the Midwestern EPA division or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
No. The person who needs to resign is one tough douche. My contempt for that man knows no bounds.
Well, I want him indicted.
I want him strung up. I'm not a death penalty person. I really am not. I've changed. I've gone 360 on that. But every once in a while, because my revenge fantasies kick in, and I am lucky. I only share the zip code of Flint. I've always been on the same water that they never should have been changed off of. But that being said, no one should have to face this crisis. No one should have their elected government taken away. And if they want it, this is...
Well, no, you raise a question. Okay, so one tough douche, as you said, basically said it was everybody's fault but his.
Yes.
Okay, so that presumably includes the emergency manager he selected and put in place in Flint, correct?
Yes.
And the warrant for his arrest is when?
Coming. It's the same place where Cliven Bundy's is.
Oh, maybe the FBI and he are having a tea and sympathy too.
Yes. Thoughts and prayers, Bob.
Thoughts and prayers, Thomas. Thoughts and prayers.
I am so happy I've not been on the air because all I know is I would be uncontrollable swearing. And I know some of my audience likes that, but this is, it's beyond the pale at this point. And then you have that cringeworthy creature going around on her broom to Trump events. You literally get bail if you're a Republican, and if you're a Democrat, you go to jail. And I don't understand. I'm at a loss at this point. You know, these so-called good Christians don't give a damn about Flint. They only see it as a win for the next election. They don't see these people as people. And it's, and I'm sorry, I'm going on a babbling rant like her, but she is only getting the attention because it's a car wreck. And when we have a national disaster, when the president of the United States, who has been in Detroit and won't go to the Flint or the Detroit schools, where it's equally a disaster, this is privatization excuse 101. We wreck it, then privatize.
Well, it does sound a little bit like that, doesn't it?
Oh, it sounds totally like that.
Why? You remember the much vaunted Pottery Barn rule during the Iraq War, Thomas?
Yeah.
You broke it, you pay, you buy it?
Yeah.
Well, where's Rick Snyder's Pottery Barn rule?
Apparently, he gave up...
Is that one of those IOKIYAR things?
Yes. This dick just needs to go. And if... I preach this time and time again. Any show I'm on, it doesn't matter if you, Nicole Sandler, Tom Hartman, when I'm lucky enough to get through, midterms matter. For hell's, the Koch brothers will buy off a school board, and you'll wonder why. So they can charter school it up, dumb down the kids, and then it doesn't matter if their school that they go into is poisoned in Detroit because they're dumb as a box of rocks anyway. And they think the Republicans are the best thing since sliced bread because Jesus told them so. And then that's how we don't get single-payer health care. And that's how we have to see a guy like T. Rump, president of the United States.
Jesus.
And, you know?
Well, and I know I've seen some frustration coming from you. I'm getting really, really tired of the vitriol. You know, not necessarily coming directly from Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton, and certainly not from Senator Sanders. But the vitriol coming from their partisans is getting really noxious.
Don't even get me, Bob. If I hear it, see one.
I mean, honest to Jesus, I saw a post come across my feed earlier today. Bernie Sanders says we have too much deodorant.
Yeah, I know. It's like, really, that's what you're worried about? We have poisoned kids.
And of course, the first thing that came to mind to me was. Have you ever seen a socialist use deodorant, Mandrake?
You're right.
And they don't do that. They just smell bad, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well. Yeah, and they use unisex bathrooms. And they're going to hell when they die. I think I just described myself. Wait, sorry.
Yeah.
But I'm just so frustrated. And I had to take the time. Between the tech issues and the utter frustration building up, I had to take the time off. But I wanted to call in and say how thankful I am that you're back on the air. One. And two.
Yeah, Tuesday was very frustrating, Thomas.
Oh, Wednesday was for me. I had to shut down everything. And I was literally talking to a pile of garbage in the chat for our server people who basically told me, I don't know what to tell you. And then they decided to restart our stream. And now everything's working, knock on wood, and hopefully it'll stay that way. It literally reinstalled the stream server software.
Well, it got even more frustrating after the program was over because I didn't feel particularly good about us being here in a house with very little in the way of heat. So I decamped us across the river to a little no-tell motel that's reasonably cheap. And guess what? They didn't have any electricity either.
Jesus.
So we grabbed a pizza. It was the warmest thing in the house.
Oh.
And came back home and shivered through the night.
See, this is...
So earlier today, I went across the river in search of... you know, we've got these little propane heat buddies.
Yeah.
For instance, that's how we heat the studio. And they run on the little 1 pound Coleman propane bottles.
Okay, yep.
Well, as you may have noticed, we have a blizzard coming. And it's supposed to begin arriving tomorrow.
Jesus.
There is not a 1 pound propane bottle left in Fayetteville or Oak Hill, West Virginia.
That doesn't surprise me.
And I went so far as to having to actually setting foot inside Walmart.
Ooh, I'm sorry.
And they didn't have it. And you know, we've got a few, but look, I have to deal with the realities of what this place is, and I have no confidence in Appalachian Power's ability to keep its rickety the batshit and baling wire power grid up and running during a storm like what is apparently coming.
All you're doing, Bob, is giving me a visual advertisement in my head for solar and wind. That's all you're doing. Because if we had a clean... This is I laugh at Martin O'Malley because I think he's a joke, but the one thing that's not a joke is his clean energy plan. The only good one that there is, really.
He mentioned that Sunday night he mentioned that he wanted a commitment for a sustain. You know, he called on Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton and Senator Sanders to endorse his idea of a sustainable grid a clean energy grid, a commitment thereto by 2050. And I was going, yeah, do that.
Yeah.
And of course, Mrs. Greenspan and Lester couldn't stand that. So what did they do? Did they toss it to Joke Toad, who then said that we would be coming back and doing the swimsuit competition, and then they went to a commercial? Isn't that how that played out?
Yeah, no, it was the most that I think that the way they ended that whole thing was just bizarre, and I think they probably did it.
But then there's this. I realize we're kind of cruising through the second decade of the 21st century now, but 2050 is 34 years away. Now, in his State of the Union address, President Obama called for an Apollo program approach to the curing of cancer.
Yes, he did. And I applauded.
And me too. But see, there's stuff. We need cures for cancer, okay? But to the same extent that, for instance, that when the Affordable Care Act was being drafted, Senator Sanders made sure that there was language in the legislation for supporting wellness and rural health care access. Well, we need to think about wellness in when we think about cancer. And I'm actually going somewhere with this. I haven't just gone off into the weeds, Thomas. I promise. I promise. Did you catch that? That could be.
Yeah. Don't promise unless you can.
So, you know, one of the best ways to eliminate a whole lot of cancer from our world would be.
What would that be, Bob?
Eliminating the use of hydrocarbons for energy.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely.
And so, in saying what he said, President Obama said, "Well, you know, we got to the moon inside of 10 years." And I took that to be the upshot of what he was saying about the cancer thing that Joe Biden's going to work on. You know, he wants to say it's going to be cured in 10 years. Well, that's not going to happen as long as we're dumping the poisons onto people and into people that we're dumping.
Well,
I mean, there might be cures, but there's not going to be a vaccine. And where the hydrocarbons are concerned, if we're going to keep using them, we need a vaccine. Now, the larger point: why are we talking about and you know, bless Martin O'Malley's heart, but why are we talking about a clean, sustainable energy grid 34 years from now?
Because the same Republican jackass or conservative jackass will say that we can't get off combustion engine cars with regular gasoline and go all electric, will say we need time. And that's why he's being pragmatic. See, 1999 called and they want their presidential candidate back. What we need to do.
I mean, Jimmy Carter during the heart of during the worst part of the energy crisis in the 70s. You remember when we were being screwed again by our dear friends and partners in peace, the Saudis?
Well, not really. I was a little baby, but
okay. Well,
but
yeah.
But he
said we needed to get started then. Well, 34 years from say 1977. Would be 2011, and we would just now have it.
No,
so I mean, I'm trying to provide some scope here. If we're going to talk, if we're going to talk about sustainable energy, we have to start talking about needing it yesterday. Because if you're saying we're going to have one by 2050, you're not putting any urgency behind it. Okay, maybe it winds up being 2050, Thomas. But we need to go after it as if we want it to happen by 2025.
No,
in that same time span in which we went to the moon.
I got to disagree with you. We need to go about it as if we needed it done yesterday.
Precisely my point.
And see, our biggest problem is, as Democrats and progressives, I think, and I'm, this is coming from a Republican perspective, is we give Republicans and not of like minds wiggle room. And what, to be pragmatic, to stall, to come up with all these reasons why we can't, and it doesn't get done or it gets done half-assed. What we need to start doing is stop giving wiggle room. You know, we need to start being almost bumper sticker on how we think about things. Like, you know, stop causes, cure cancer. I mean, how simple is that? What? And then the idiot will ask, well, what's the cause? Oh, the car you're driving. That's the cause.
Mm-hmm.
We really need to, and we need the Frank Luntz the fuck out of this. Because they are to stop us every day. And I know that, I know a lot of my liberal friends and everybody, well, Tom, there's nuance. And I'm saying, my whole point is, don't get rid of the nuance. Just get it to the point where we can have a discussion with the idiocy that has become this country. Because we've dropped the ball as liberals and progressives because we've allowed Republicans speak to define the narrative. Rick Schneider, one tough douche, says it was the federal government's fault. And what do I see happen 2 days later? I see somebody from the EPA, the federal government, resign before he does. Who's defined the narrative, Bob?
It weren't us.
And that's what I'm saying. And that's one of the reasons why I started Some Say. And the reason I call it Some Say is because those pricks get to say all the time on Fox Smells, some people say that Obama kills babies in his sleep. Well, God damn it, I want to take it back. I want to take the language back. I want to stop the idiocy. And I want to win elections. And then I want to fucking save my planet. All at the same time.
Or the ability of human beings to live upon it.
Thank you. You just Frank Lunced me.
I do that once in a while.
But you see what I'm saying? This is why I've been so frustrated this week. Because I see the idiot parade winning, and we're spinning our heels, not fighting against it. And you're right. We need to do all these things to stop cancer. But the only way we're going to do it is bumper sticker Frank Luntz it. And as smart and brilliant as Tom Hartman and as wonderful as he is, everybody just sees a nerd. They don't want to hear the nuance. They don't have time for the nuance because they're working three damn jobs. Because they're not getting $15 an hour. So what we need to do is get to the nuance. So at some point, Tom or you or God forbid me can explain it. And I think that's the only way we're going to win at this point. Now, I might be wrong. I've been wrong before. But I see the Republicans doing it every day, and somehow they're winning and not going to jail.
From Burns, Oregon, to Flint. Where's the governor's mansion in
Lansing?
Lansing. Nobody goes to jail. Well, I mean, okay, that one Oklahoma City, was it Oklahoma City? That one Oklahoma cop who went on a rape frenzy got 263 years today.
Yes.
Good. Good. Very, very good.
About damn time. Now where are all the other indictments? Oh, wait. Break out the crickets.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, it's, I wish Obama was the socialist the Republicans claim he is.
Oh, no, you don't, because the Hilarians would be having a fit.
True.
And I, because, you know, all of us, and I'm trying to stay above the fray to a certain extent. All of us who, or most of us, I know, okay, there are a lot of us who are Bernie supporters who say, well, you know, if he doesn't win the nomination, yeah, I'll vote for Hillary. How many times have you heard a Hilarion say that if Bernie wins, they'll do that?
No. Oh, no, once. Once. I got to give him credit where it's due. Nevada Black, I'm going to get his name wrong of his organization, but he endorsed Hillary Clinton, and he flat out on my show said that his second choice was Bernie Sanders. So, because I asked him, he asked me the same thing, and I said, fair game. Are you willing to support, because I've already said it, are you willing to support Bernie Sanders if he's the Democratic nominee? And he said yes.
Well, it seems like a bit of a rarity.
Yes, sadly.
Well, Thomas, it's good talking to you. I'm sorry you had your own crises, but stick with this long enough and you'll find that you'll have a wheelbarrow load after a while.
No, thank you, Bob, and you keep on trucking.
All right, be good, Thomas.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. And, hey, welcome to the program.
Well, good evening. How are you?
I'm well, Heather. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Up in Frosty, Michigan.
Yeah, I'm in Frosty, Michigan. I think the governor should definitely be indicted. Unfortunately, he's killed I don't know how many people.
Oh, there's at least 10.
Yeah, 10 plus I don't know how many children. but, you know, that's... this is just so freaking sad because it seems like every day there's more and more to the story. And the fact is, I guess it's the water's been bad since 2014, maybe? And that poor mayor, I believe she just got elected. So I just feel bad for her. And I also feel bad, well, obviously I feel bad for the people who have lost relatives and have been poisoned by this stuff, but I don't think the governor paid attention at all.
I think if people dig hard enough, we will eventually find out that it's not that he didn't pay attention, it's that he actively encouraged it. Again, he's the one who foisted that emergency manager on Flint.
Okay. Oh, yeah, I know the guy that wrote the bill that helped him do that, too. He's actually my state rep.
Lovely.
Oh, and I've been unhappy with him for some other shit he's done, but I'm gerrymandered, and, you know... Odds of he or his little cohort, who's the third most conservative senator in Michigan. But yeah, I think they're quite assholes, but, you know, you won't even hear me say much else. But, and then there was the Trump and Palin political lovemaking. Oh, God.
How loudly did you scream?
I about died. I saw that 14-second clip. I just couldn't believe it. And then I saw the 14-second clip, and then I heard something the other morning on the radio. And, oh, my, it was hilarious. I just, I hope this doesn't help either one of them.
Well, here in a minute, I'm going to run some audio that will probably make you scream even louder. At least I hope I'm going to run it. It depends on whether the computer cooperates. We'll see. But I would advise you not to put the hockey puck too awfully far away, Heather. Good talking to you. Stay warm, and maybe you'll be the one to break the happy news that maybe Rick Snyder has been found having done the right thing. Killed himself.
Yes. Yeah. All right. Well, have a great night.
All right. Take care.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye now. That's Heather calling from Michigan. Let's, no, seriously. This is not a joke. This is not from The Onion. This is a real Ted Cruz presidential campaign ad.
My qualifications for president of the United States are rather narrow. Is he or she godly? Does he or she love us? Can he or she do the job? And finally, would they kill a duck and put them in a pot and make them a good duck gumbo? I've looked at the candidates. Ted Cruz is my man. He fits the bill. He's godly. He loves us. He's the man for the job, and he will go duck hunting because today we're going. Ted Cruz is my man. I'm voting for him. Cruz, the reason we're going to vote for you, all of us, is because you're one of us, my man. That's why we're voting for you. It's now or never.
Interestingly, what sounds like a duck call there, Ted Cruz was making those noises with his own needle nose. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ted Cruz loves us. And as okay, so here's the description of the video part. That's Cy Doofus. That was the Duck Doofus guy. You realize that? And Cy there did it in blackface. Mm-hmm. Oh, sure, it's camo, but no, it was blackface. Lovely, right? Oh, Jesus. Let's run over to the stress line, where Jim in Nevada Stan has been waiting. Hey, Jim.
What's up, Bob?
What do you know?
Well, good news. Governor Sanders, he hopes the people can, pull themselves up by their bootstraps,
Who?
So, I mean, these Republicans, I can't believe people vote for them. And I'm getting to the point where when stuff bad like that happens, I'm like, good, voted for it. You may be dead lying. And I guess I'm just getting real cynical in my, older age. I mean, do you feel that way sometimes? It's like, it's so freaking obvious, and they keep on, Obama had, the House and the Senate for what?
Hey, about 15 seconds.
Yeah. And then, he's come up with some pretty good plans with everything, and, and it's so obvious to me that they're just blocking him, and it's hurting people, They could have helped the economy a great deal by just passing, some legislation to create jobs, but everything's got to be by the magical, mystical private enterprise thing, which doesn't seem to really be doing anything. I just think, Bernie, and he's talking about, let's talk about a little bit, the FDR model. There's our model out of the quagmire we've been in for the last basically 30 years, ever since, the cowboy Ronald Reagan started that, came up with that crazy crap, and people just still seem to buy it.
Beats me. It absolutely does. And, we can make fun of the Palin endorsement all we want to, Jim.
But she's been hauled into that for a reason. Because she apparently brings some votes. It means insanity to us. But it's a deal maker.
Yeah. That just floors me. And I'm surprised Snyder hadn't been indicted.
Are you surprised? Because I'm not surprised.
Yeah. Well, I don't know that, but people, he's his second term, right? This is the second term of this guy, right?
Not sure, but we'll get an answer pretty quick, I imagine.
But it's like, in Kansas, Stan, they re-elected that guy, and he practically left the state, right?
The same thing goes for Scott Walker.
Exactly. Yeah. Because I hear because I listen to I'm very selective in my news sources. So I don't watch Fox News and Corp and Chicken Noodle News as little as possible. But it's just it's incredible that people keep on voting time and time again. I mean, I'm hoping somehow Bernie can get in. I still got a little faith, but, a busload of faith to get by, as Lou Reed would say. But, in reality, it's like, can the American people catch a clue? Can they rent one? Can you rent one for them?
I'd like to, can you buy one? I mean, where's Vanna? By the way, I was thinking about this earlier. When is the Nevada primary? It comes up pretty quick, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's in the latter part of February, I think. It's not a primary, it's a caucus.
Right, right.
Yeah. They still have same-day registration and all that, so... that's pretty cool. I was surprised, but I think I checked into it and same day registration, but somebody in the chat room make sure you're registered because of possible snafus or something, but we'll see what happens.
Well, I hope you'll report back for us. It'll be kind of fun.
I'll do that. So, yeah, it's just, I've been going through this crap for, let's see, it's 2050, 35 years now, this Reagan insanity. Not 30. And the sad thing is, that's over 70% of my life. I remember when... Reagan got elected in 80, I was surprised he got reelected, but I just never was that impressed with him. Well, I'm not impressed with any Republican, but I remember about that time when McCain was known as the Maverick, the so-called Maverick Republican. You kind of look at it. There's nothing mavericky about him. James Garner,
Maverick was his name. Yeah. Well, Jim, have yourself a good evening. I'm glad to hear from you, and keep us posted.
All right, you too. Enjoy. Check you later.
All right, take care. See ya. Bye now. Our buddy Jim calling from Nevada, Stan. Couple of different places to go back to Oregon briefly. You remember a couple of weeks ago when we had the story of
who was it? The grandson of the that Hammond monster, and what and how they sandpapered his flesh. Well, it turns out that according to Raw Story, the Hammonds illegally grazed their cattle on the wildlife refuge and apparently did significant damage to the animal population that is protected there. They engaged in aerial hunting of animals in the refuge, made death threats against employees there and their families, and they basically, in the language of the article here, altered the entire species composition of critical ecosystems with their illegal grazing. They weren't punished or even tried or charged with any of this. Now, get this. There is a gag order on employees of the Fish and Wildlife Service now that the FBI is in so-called in charge of monitoring the occupation. Yeah, really. Now, here's what the Fish and Wildlife Service did for the Hammonds. According to 80-year-old Marvin Plennert, he said, "We gave them a day to cross through the refuge, and they took two or three weeks to do it. They were in your face about everything. They kept pushing the envelope, cut fences. Cattle wound up in the refuge illegally." And this has been going on with the Hammonds since the 1980s. And nothing was done. Nothing was done. Nothing was done. At one point in time, the Hammonds threatened to kidnap the son of one of the Fish and Wildlife Service officials, wrap him in barbed wire, and drown him. Really? Yes. True. And these are the people that these good God, well, God-fearing, upstanding, Kolob believing, you know, evangelical, amosexual Mormons, these are the people they think are blameless victims of big government. It really. Where do they get their values? I don't know. I do not know. So let's. It's six after. If you want to get into the conversation, jump right in. Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype, 304-574-8178 is line one. Line two, the stress line, 304-663-4676. This is listener-supported conversation radio. We had about $300 to raise this evening. We are at zero. I was kind of, you know, I felt kind of good that the hole was not as bad as it, but that's a hole. That's, we'll have a $500 hole tomorrow evening. Hey, yeah. So, yeah, a little break and your calls, or who knows, fill a bob string for a Thorn in the Side Thursday. You pick. It's up to you. This is The Horn.
As I walked out in the streets of Laredo, as I walked out in Laredo one day, I spied a young cowboy all wrapped in white linen, wrapped in white linen as cold as the blade. I see by your outfit that you are a cowboy. These words he did say as I boldly walked by. Come sit down beside me and hear my sad story. I'm shot in the breast and I know I must die. It was once in the saddle I used to go dashing. Once in the saddle I used to go gay. First down to Rosie's and then to the card house. Got shot in the breast and I'm dying today. Get 16 gamblers to carry my coffin. Get 6 jolly cowboys to sing me a song. Take me to the graveyard and lay the sod o'er me. For I'm a young cowboy and know I've done wrong. Get 6 jolly cowboys to carry my coffin. Get 6 pretty maidens to sing me a song. Take me to the valley and lay the sod o'er me. For I'm a young cowboy and know I've done wrong. Oh, beat the drum slowly and play the fife lowly. Play the dead marches, they carry me along. Put bunches of roses all over my coffin. Roses to deaden the clods as they fall. As I walked out in the streets of Laredo, as I walked out in Laredo one day, I spied a young cowboy all wrapped in white linen, wrapped in white linen as cold as the clay.
Little dedication going out for the hard-working, patriotic cowboys out there at the bird sanctuary. Sheesh. Yeah, this is the Hornets, Thorn in the Side, Thursday, the 21st of January, 2016. Back to Ted Cruz for a minute. Apparently, stuff is getting real in the campaign for him. There's an outfit now called Americans United for Values, and they're going to release or have released a 60-second radio ad. It's running in Iowa that, it doesn't mince a lot of words. The script has, the voiceover script has things like a female voice saying, I saw something about Ted Cruz about how gay marriage wouldn't be a top priority for him. Another female voice says, I saw that too. He said it at a New York fundraiser. He tells them one thing, tells Iowa another. Mm-hmm. I heard that he gives less than 1% to charity and church, another female voice, one of the females says. And the other one replies, he doesn't tithe? Isn't he a millionaire? His wife worked for a big Wall Street bank, right? And then eventually one of the voices says, hey, he's a phony. The Americans United for Values is dropping $125,000 to air that ad statewide in Iowa. And, of course, he is a big phony. But you got to wonder who's, cui bono. This isn't some progressive outfit running an ad against Ted Cruz because he's a maniac. No, no. This is somebody hoping. Sounds kind of T-rumpish, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. It does indeed.
By the way, Jim in Nevada-stan mentioned the marvelously coherent Diane from Kansas-stan, and Diane wrote in and said, Governor Brownslop will be with us a bit longer. He recently gave his last State of the State address with the Kansas Congress shoppers applauding like all is well. All is not well. Oh, I'm sorry, Kansas Congress sloppers. Sloppers. There we go, yeah. There's a brutal reckoning coming in a bunch of states. For instance, Scott Walker in Wisconsin just effectively put paid to the idea of civil service for just about everything but the University of Wisconsin system. Now it's going to be one of those meritocracies. No more civil service exams. No, no, no. Political cronyism will rule. And with so many of these things, it's like the presidency of Dim Leader, the Reign of Error. We were stuck with him for 8 years, and the smart people said, you know, he's going to be long gone by the time the evils that he has done, that those chickens come home to roost. And they were right and they were wrong. Because some of it accelerated, and they actually came home. They were coming home to roost as he was leaving office. But Michigan is only just now beginning to reap what Rick Snyder has sown. What will happen in Wisconsin in coming years and decades? It can scarcely be calculated. And the same with Kansas. And Kansas has water and environmental problems that it can't begin to even address. And it's gonna land in these states like a ton of bricks. Jesus. Down in Australia, Robert writing, subject line, poison. The people of Flint have been drinking lead-poisoned water for a year. ISIS must be rolling around on the floor laughing. Who needs terrorists attacking the USA when greedy bastards like this are already doing it? Bingo! There's tonight's toaster. Thank you, Robert. Behold the truth. If a group of disaffected Muslims had done to Flint, Michigan, what Rick Snyder did to the children and the people of Flint, Michigan, bombs would already be falling. But see, we will tolerate from free market Republicans things that we would not even tolerate. And look, I don't think ISIS, I don't think ISIS would do what Rick Snyder did. And it was all for a measly couple of $100. But Robert's right, who needs them? We can just sit around and watch Republicans poison this country to death. And here's an interesting fact, also courtesy of Robert. Did you know that in adjusted 2007 dollars, the Apollo program cost one-third the amount of money that has been spent so far on the F-35? How about that? Kind of makes you wonder what that smart sustainable energy grid would cost. And by the way, over at Think Progress, Natasha Geiling has an article that's worth your time. What will it take for America to go 100% renewable? It's a long piece. and worth, and like I said, well worth your time. Maybe run over and have a look. And let's run over to the phones. Having I think Jim and I managed to conjure the marvelously coherent Diane from Kansas stand. Are you there, Diane?
I'm here. Good evening, Bob.
Good evening.
I was not going to call in because I'm working on this university deadline, which requires a lot of paperwork. But
sure.
Yeah, you all did conjure me, and I'm putting the paperwork away for the time being. I mean, you conjured me with the talk of these reprobate governors. And
good word.
I'm sorry?
Good word.
Yeah, really. And I wanted to share that I found out a way I could listen to Brownslop's State of the Union, or State of the State Address, or whatever it's called. And that is, I listened to it on Radio Free Kansas with that wild man, Mike Cadell.
He's awesome. He's awesome.
He's really something. He would play part of part of what Brownslop was saying, and then he would pause and provide the truth to counter the lies that the governor was spouting. By the way, I would like to add that I call as an ordinary citizen and not as a state employee.
I understand.
Yes, because that's probably not necessary, but as it so happens, a couple of years ago, Kansas enacted the most punitive social media policy for professors in the country.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Doesn't that fit?
Well, that reminds me of something a governmental creature, maybe a state senator or a state representative down in South Carolina did a couple of days ago. He introduced a bill requiring registration of journalists.
Oh, God.
You know why I did it? Because these little thief-thieves were hurt because all these liberal journalists come down here and they talk about how we need to register guns. Well, let's see how they like it.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's just no doubt about the depths of fascism we have slipped into. But by the way, this is just to be technical for the Freds of Kansas who might be listening, this is not social media.
Oh, right? No. This is radio.
But no, I mean, we cannot write letters to the editor and sign with our title, whatever. I mean,
I can't go into much detail. I don't necessarily have as much as I would like. But a longtime employee of a university here in West Virginia was recently given his walking papers for having dared to pen an op-ed piece for the Gazette.
Oh dear.
Yeah. How's that for a chilling effect?
Why should that be a problem? I mean, did he sign? He or she sign? Did you say he or she? I don't remember.
He.
Did he sign his title?
No, I don't believe so.
Then that rules out us as ordinary citizens, which I think would be unconstitutional. I think when the state of Kansas said that we couldn't write letters to the editor, if I remember correctly, we simply couldn't sign our professor title. But, I mean, if we just gave I've written letters to the editors before and just given my street address. And I don't even like doing that. I think,
But I guess now if you want to do that, you have to request anonymity, right? I mean,
I guess. I don't know the policy here. The policy I'm talking about is directly from the regent,
Yeah.
So it's state specific. But can you say what this person was writing about?
He was writing about higher education.
Okay. Oh, my God. See? Did he have tenure?
Oh, very much so.
Oh, my God. Well, I'm not going to live in fear. But the other day, I found myself reading the social media policy carefully. And I do not use Twitter. I do use LinkedIn, but professionally. Like if I hold some public event at the university, I'll post it online. Well, it's already sanctioned by the university. I don't worry about such posts whatsoever. But you know, when I read that we have the most punitive policy in the country,
I said it rather flippantly, but it's absolutely true. It is a chilling effect. And that is, you know, that's a very real thing. I mean, that's one of those phrases the Supreme Court hauls out once in a while.
Yeah. And
it acts as a, and this is a dirty word in First Amendment law. It acts as a sort of constructive prior restraint.
Oh, my God.
And a prior restraint is deemed nasty because that's when the government says, you can't say this at all.
It sounds like we're talking about dogs, prior restraint. Like, put a muzzle on the person.
It's exactly what it is.
And a leash. Unleashed. Oh. Well, I don't worry too much about it, but I don't know how much I should be worried about it because I'm not sure there's been a test case here. I mean, with full professorship and tenure, I can just tell you there are certain procedures that would have to be gone through. And anyway, it's not about me. I'm not going to worry about it. I do feel badly for this professor in West Virginia. I mean, because if society can't hear from the professorial class, they're going to be missing some information. I mean, we don't have all the answers or anything like that. I'm not putting ourselves up on a pedestal, but I mean, we live in the realm of research and looking at facts and, you know, studying history for context and blah, 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 like I'm sure many people do. We just make a living at it. So why not hear from us? No, it's just wailing into the wind. I'm not going to waste energy on worrying about it.
Well, I mean, that's one way of looking at it. By the same token, it's hard to ignore what seems to be a pretty obvious fascist streak.
Oh, absolutely.
In these right wing governments.
Oh, absolutely. And to hear the Kansas Congress, you know, when Mike Cadell was playing this Brownslop speech, to hear the applause as if everything is wonderful. It was fascistic, sure, when, you know, for anyone who knows the truth, but it's also surreal and unreal. And then the only way I could listen to it again is that Mike Cadell would cut in with, you know, these facts and just completely undercut what had just been said. But, you know, talking about university life related to public policy or state policy, there was a time, I think it was 2 years ago, when I teach, I'm calling as an ordinary citizen, but I am going to say that I teach like a MBA course in managing the triple bottom line business. But at the time, 2 years ago, it was entitled something else, and it was an old title, and I single-handedly proposed to the Department College University and Regents that the course title be changed to Managing the Triple Bottom Line Business to reflect, you know, more, you know, environmental concerns and blah, blah, blah. At the same time that my proposal was going through channels and approved at every level, with not just approved, but, oh, yes, this is good, you know. Because our college is actually known for ethics and ethics-related coursework. I mean, we've had, it was embedded in the program a long time ago before I came, and so it's not a fad or fashion, it's a real thing. But anyway, at the same time, that proposal for redesigning that course, and I'm the only one who teaches it, so it wasn't like a big, you know, a huge consensus thing, except to get it approved at every, you know, point in the channel. But at the same time, the Huffington Post had published a bill that had not yet reached the floor of the Kansas House, but had an identifying number about how it would be against the law in Kansas to use state money to do anything that had to do with sustainability. And I'm like, oh, good. My proposal is heading that way. Oh, it passed. I'm doing it. It's done. It's a done deal. The piece of legislation, which still has the number on it, is, I guess, sitting there. It was never, it never got out of committee, apparently. But, you know, we have a sustainability director on campus, and I'm sure we're not the only Kansas university that does. I was just looking at that, like, how would they enforce that? The textbooks have it, you know, that content.
And, yeah, well, the, you know, you're thinking about things that they never think about.
I don't think they think at all.
And I just had a note from James via Facebook Messenger, and he said, Diane, it's a double-edged sword. The professor could enlighten us, i.e. you, or he, she could reveal his or her own ineptitude.
Sure. Well, but then, if I'm understanding, is that James, you say?
Yeah.
James, if I'm understanding James correctly, then, I mean, a professor making a mistake in reasoning, it's okay to have that public. I mean, that's the realm we live in. We have to present our research publicly. It has to go through refereed journals at every step of the way.
Peer review and all that fun stuff.
Oh, I mean, and presentations at conferences before we write it up for a journal submission, and our workshops every step of the way, like every committee we serve on, we're conditioned to have our assertions and our ideas pass muster, not only in-house, but from our stakeholders, from our students, from our business advisors, from our donors, from blah, 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 editors. And I mean, so if I'm understanding James correctly, I would agree it's a double-edged sword. And if we make a mistake in a letter to an editor, factually or in our reasoning, so be it. It should be scrutinized and someone can write back and debate it.
You're right, but you don't just say, off with their head.
You don't kill the speech before the speech has a chance to happen.
Yeah, and then it can go back and forth and let the best facts and critical reasoning win. But sure, I mean, I think I don't know what would drive a policy for professors. As I understand it, the policy is we can't sign our title to the letter. The last time I looked, that's what the policy conveyed. But is that driven by a fear that we would make a mistake or tell the truth? To me, it doesn't matter. Just let
no. It's the truth. It's the truth telling that they hate the right wing.
Well,
because see, their ideas are so bereft of reason.
Oh, obviously.
And suffer such a paucity of intelligence that they can't withstand scrutiny, and as such, they fall apart like a house of cards at high tide on a beach.
Yeah.
And that's what they can't tolerate. That's why, you know, that's why they only win in a rigged game. And that, in turn, is why they work so hard to rig
to rig everything that they can get at. I mean, look at there's the big push is on in West Virginia for right to work.
Oh yeah, I heard you and was it Gerald?
Yeah.
Talking about that. That was Gerald, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And that's because they cannot compete with the good wages and the good living that union employees generally have as compared to the rest of the folks out here suffering and striving. So the only way to remedy that is not to improve your own position, but to destroy the people who have the better idea.
Well, it's a downward spiral from there, isn't it, Bob?
Oh, sure.
I mean, it's a downward cultural spiral. It feeds on itself. I mean, I don't know what will happen when, I mean, Brownback cannot serve another term, but I tell you, I'm learning so much from listening to Radio Free Kansas because there's this slot where Mike Cadell has Bill Otto on, and he was a former state rep from the 9th District who lost his position through gerrymandering, you know? And so I knew there was the coup, but he actually lived through it, and without any malice or whatsoever, he just explains what's happened.
Yeah.
And they are without mercy to their own, according to Bill Otto, in that, I mean, what they've done to people is horrid. But what they've done to their own moderate Republicans is just as bad. I mean, politically at least, they've been horrible to their own kind. So, they won't let them serve on certain committees Bill Otto has just explained all these ways, including gerrymandering, by which they got rid of the moderate Republicans. And moderate Republicans are not a bad lot here in Kansas. They can be, historically, they can be reasoned with.
Well, once upon a time, they were progressives.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was a very, very long time ago.
Governor Dawkins, and Eisenhower. Well, you know what he said. I used to have a quote of his on my office door, and it was that thing. It was that paragraph he wrote to his brother, something about how if oil men and the like ever thought to cut Social Security, they would never be.
The Republican Party would cease to be a viable institution inside of a generation.
Right. I was paraphrasing badly, but you've got it. Yeah, a lot has changed since then. And, it's interesting to me to watch the drama because, I grew up in a suburb of Johnson County, Kansas, a suburb of Kansas City, and anytime I hear about representatives from Johnson County, I'm just flabbergasted about the school cuts because that wealthy part of Kansas City suburbs, and Carol, Queen of the Minions, will know what I'm talking about because she knows that area. They were always so proud of their schools, their SAT scores, just the awards and blah, blah, blah. And it seems like they're just going along with, ruining it. So, I don't understand that about. I guess it's just the people they've elected.
Well, Carol says you are right on.
About the Johnson County and.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And I have some passing familiarity with that region. I mean.
Yeah.
And you're right. It was a jewel.
Yeah.
But in states controlled by the right wing, and you know what? There's a carryover effect as well, Diane, that affects the rest of the union. We don't have any jewels anymore.
Bob, you're a little muffled. I don't know what it is, but I didn't catch that.
I said we don't have any jewels anymore.
Oh.
We don't have crowning achievements. All we have is
is fear-based, recrimination-driven assaults on the public good.
Yes, yes. It is so true. It is so true, although we still have, you know, we're living through a time when it doesn't happen overnight. I mean, the remnants remain. I mean, all one has to do is look at the university newsletter from any of the universities here, and they're still publishing, this professor won this award, this professor published this, or this student got a scholarship to this place. I mean, what I'm saying is, in a way, in a surrealistic way, life goes on as usual. These regimes are not dismantled all at once. You know?
No. They're done a little bit at a time, sort of like raising the temperature of the water that's got the frogs in it.
Yeah.
And by the way, Carol says Johnson County is going along because what they're doing isn't half as bad as what happened to the schools on the Missouri side, Diane.
Oh, dear God. Well, that's no reason to go along. I'm sure what Carol says is the truth, and I appreciate hearing it. But I mean, what can the Johnson Countyans be thinking to just do it because it's not as bad as what happened in Missouri? That is not how Johnson Countyans thought when I grew up there, not at all. But it just goes along with what you're saying about the decline in general. Yeah. Well, on the other hand, and Carol would be able to address this. I mean, we are hearing, and I've heard it from several sources and valid sources, that we're losing our best teachers to Missouri. I mean, that is just sort of a thing that we hear and from news sources. And in Missouri, they have, you know, I'm told they have signs to, road signs or something to lure Kansas teachers over the line. So it's a little bit complicated, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, I mean, those two states are known for their border wars now, aren't they?
Well, I guess. I mean, I grew up like five blocks from the state line, you know, so I never, I mean, because, you know, the state line runs down the city, so to speak. I mean, divides the city. So when you live out in the suburbs like I did, a state line five blocks away, it doesn't mean a lot, you know, from on the ground perspective. But historically, yeah, there's been a lot of tension, and apparently it's picking up now in the realm of education. And by the way, I do not know if our Supreme Court has actually decided on whether the new formula for allocation of tax money to education is constitutional or not. That may be hanging over Brownback's head. Because remember that state budget director we brought to campus?
Yes.
He referred to that, and someone in the audience asked him what's going to happen if the Supreme Court rules that school formula unconstitutional, and Dwayne just kind of, for the listeners, this is a former budget director who worked for two Republican governors and one Democratic governor and won a national award, and he came to campus to explain the budget crisis to us. Anyway, when Dwayne Gosin, was asked that question, he just shrugged and said, well, you know, what can the legislature do? They don't have any money. I mean, the implication being the Supreme Court can rule what it will, and nothing will happen.
How many divisions does the Chief Justice command?
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah, right.
As Andrew Jackson put it, Justice Taney has made his ruling. Now let him enforce it.
Right. So now, as I understand it, of course, that's right. It may just be moot, but it will be sad because, as I understand it, Kansas is maybe the only state that has in its constitution that all students, no matter from what background, have the right to an equal education. That is in our constitution. And I think we're rare or even singular in that regard. So it will be quite a thing if, I mean, we have a block grant formula now. I think we can all agree that that's not a sound way to manage it.
No, that's the right wing way to destroy a program, Diane.
And by way
of further explanation on what she said about the Missouri side, Carol says 50% of the schools on Kansas City. In Kansas City were closed due to budget cuts, but not in the white neighborhoods. Poor black kids have to travel twice as far for their free education, but they can't afford the transportation. So the dropout rate has doubled, and the wrong coloreds are blamed for being too lazy to go to school. And right. Carol says it's the death spiral into crushing poverty.
Right.
It's not like it's accidental.
No, and that board, actually, on the Missouri side, has had a lot of problems over the years, a lot of problems. I'm not blaming the victim, but it hasn't been managed well on top of everything else. It's not good, I'm sure. Well, that's why all these whites fled to the suburbs, including my parents. So that exacerbates the problem or even starts the problem. So there you have it. It's sad.
Well, we live in interesting times and interesting places.
Yeah. I mean, I would like to share just a couple of positive things.
Do please.
Yeah. And the reason is, I mean, so much of this is a thorn in one side, but ever since moving to Kansas, I've been kind of looking on the ground to see, because to me there's such a disconnection between the news about Kansas and how I actually see people interact here and see what they're doing. There's a disconnection. I think Kansans are pretty remarkable, and so does Thomas Frank. I mean, I know that because of the burger and beer I had with him, where he leaned over his beer and said to me, "I find Kansans so interesting." And he said it admiringly as someone who grew up in Mission Hills, which is part of that wealthy suburb thing. But, of course, he comes at it now from a perspective of writing about the place historically and particularly in light of what happened in Wichita to kick off that, the anti-abortion thing in the 80s. But anyway, so I'm always interested in watching people here and seeing how people interact. And for the most part, I think they're cool. And so I'm also watching for when I see something that doesn't quite make sense, at least not in terms of what you stereotypically hear about Kansas. Okay, so the other day I was doing what I do a lot of to unwind, and that is I go to the Central Park in the middle of this town and walk around the sidewalk, the perimeter. And this is a really cool park where arborists come in and take care of the trees. We have a skating rink. We have 3 baseball diamonds.
Oh, it sounds lovely.
We have 2 tennis courts. We have fairs that come there. Black Lives Matters has had booths there. And, you know, we call it our Central Park because it has a little system of roads in it. But it's small. Anyway, so I'm walking around, and I see in a grassy space a bunch of young men and one woman on a sunny day doing hatha yoga on the grass. I just thought that was really nice. I mean, because there's an archetypal male here, you know, that looks like, I don't know, I mean, nice looking, maybe comes from a farming background.
Salt of the earth.
Yeah, and sturdy looking. And so there's an archetypal male here, and that's who I saw doing yoga in the middle. of the
well, I mean, and that's kind of like what I went and did last night. The poetry event. I mean, not yoga, but the poetry event there at Secret Sandwich Society. I did that because I wanted to be a part of some effort to do something positive.
Right.
And to maybe help in some small way build some community.
Oh, we're hungry for community.
In this state, we're starving for it.
Yep.
Because the coal industry has deliberately divided us for 120 years.
Yeah.
But more so recently, as we've come to understand just what a poisonous business this state has been in, and to have people come together and in goodwill and good faith and try to create a little bit of verbal art in a pleasant space, to me that was magic.
Yes, and that is still in us. It's still in these communities. You're finding it. I saw it in the park. The person leading I've taken a lot of yoga, and I've taken it from Indian masters and in the ashram I used to go to in the Catskill Mountains. And I didn't stare at the yoga gathering because that really is not polite, given their goal and what you're supposed to be thinking of when you do yoga or not thinking of. But anyway, I mean, it was on the grass. They didn't have trendy yoga stuff on. They just had their sweats on, you know?
Nice.
They had just come and they just came from campus or jogging or something. And it was so real. And that just, to me, if something happens in Kansas, it is real. It's not trendy, you know? So you had your poetry reading, which was real. And I saw a real informal, it didn't even look like a class, like just some people doing, you know, some young people doing it. And I loved it. I loved it. And one more positive thing, if I may.
Absolutely.
Okay. So last night I taught my first course of the semester to MBAs in this triple bottom line course. Okay, so it's really a corporate social responsibility course, but updated for triple bottom line and benefit corporation, which is ascending, by the way. It is. It's in 38 states now, and one of them went public last spring, and there's a lot of, you know, stuff is happening. So anyway, I was giving the first lecture for that course and for that class. And I turned the first night upside down. Before giving out the syllabus and course calendar and class policies and the introductory lecture, I put them in small groups. And I said, I want you to take 10 minutes and reflect back to the class on two things. One, what is the meaning of corporate social responsibility? And this is closed book, you know. And two, who are a firm's stakeholder? Okay. So I've never done this before. So they did it. They powwowed, so to speak. And then the thinking was they would reflect back to me, and then I would write their ideas on the board, and then I would just codify their ideas and relate it to what they're going to see in the course. Okay, I've been teaching this a while, and I studied with one of the main founders of corporate social responsibility in the U.S. He's 93 now, and I'm still in touch with him. So I know that the field has gone through times when it was under attack by the likes of Milton Friedman in the 1970s, and MBAs didn't take to it necessarily well. I'm trained as an economist, so I can deliver it in a palatable way and, you know, lead with economics and then get into the philosophy, the values, the ethics. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Those students were right there, and they, one group, and this is the most positive thing, and it almost brought me to tears. one group transcended the second question. And I live my whole life to observe students who do that. If I give a student a question, essay, in the class, whatever, and they transcend it, oh my God, it's like someone opened up the vault of gold and I walked in. So, I mean, truly. So I went around the room and one group was saying, okay, the stockholders are stakeholders, the business partners, the customers, the employees. And some of them made really good points about why, et cetera. And then I added, well, you know, government regulators and social activists. And I think one group already knew that one, local communities. But one group, before we even got the list done, said, well, we have several groups that we could put on the board as stakeholders, but really we cannot think of anyone in society who is not. I'm like, oh my God. Thank you, God. So to speak, I was so humbled and thankful to be in front of them, with them. You know, they couldn't think of one person or group in society who shouldn't be a legitimate stakeholder in the eyes of management, worthy of consideration, worthy of care. Oh, listen, this millennial generation is different, I'm telling you.
Well, you know, I just got a note from Ron in the frozen north.
Ron!
and Ron said, Diane's describing a marvelous feeling that good teachers live for.
A marvelous feeling that good teachers live for.
Yeah, that magic that you experience.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because they transcended my question. That question comes from a longstanding literature about stakeholders. Books have been written. And one group of students on the first night, before they even look at the book or have it, they've transcended all of that. Oh, thank you, Ron. You're right. And I wanted to end on that positive. It was positive to me. I don't know if we're leaving that generation such a mess that they're not going to be able to enact their new viewpoints. Because you know what? They are very sensitive to environmental issues. Very. They don't need to be. I mean, they come in with it. That was not the case even 6 years ago. Well, something's happening.
One gets the sense that the issues being raised by Senator Sanders about college debt and wanting to provide tuition-free education, I think it resonates. And I think maybe this generation is beginning to realize that their fat is already in the fire.
And my generation did it. I'm a baby boomer, you know.
So am I.
Not, yeah. A lot of us are. I am not at all proud of what we've been doing. I mean, collectively, it's appalling. Who was that? Remember that cartoonist who was really famous? Was it Trudeau?
Gary Trudeau.
I remember when he said something publicly about the baby boom generation being one of the most ridiculous groups in history. He said that in the 1980s, and I'm paraphrasing badly because he said it better. But I stopped in my tracks when I heard that in the 1980s. And he said it in the 1980s for a reason. Think about what was going on then, you
sure.
know. Yeah, and I thought, and ever since...
Yeah, thank you, baby boomers, for giving us Ronald Reagan. How can we ever repay you? Yeah.
Yeah, well, the music in the 80s was bad, too. I mean, I think the music in the 80s was a little strange. I'm not a music critic. Well, I grew up with classical music because my mom was a music teacher, but in terms of comparing the music of the 80s to what came before it, I was not impressed, but I could be talked out of that. I don't feel strongly about it, but, you know.
No, I get it. There's a lot of 80s stuff that I do like. But without a doubt, there was also a great big steaming pile of garbage produced as well, without a doubt. Hey, Diane, I'm gonna roll on and wrap things up, okay. But thank you for, once again, another marvelously coherent conversation.
You're too kind. Anyway, I'm glad about your poetry reading, and I'm glad you're back on the air, Bob.
Thank you, Diane. Have a lovely evening. Bye now.
Bye.
The marvelously coherent Diane from Kansas Stan. And a couple of words on the way out the door. I plan to be on the air tomorrow night. That is my plan. Reality may have something other to do about it. This is the headline from the Charleston Gazette of a story dated today by Rick Steelhammer. Power outages feared as wet, heavy snowfall approaches state. We've already got schools closed all over the state just about. The stuff is supposed to start flying about 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. And, you know, it wasn't even snowing Tuesday night when we lost power here until 4 a.m. By way of explanation, Appalachian Power, and I put this out on Twitter and Facebook, it said, there's a problem with a transmission. We think there's a problem with a transmission line somewhere. Thanks for nothing. So it is, and I'm nervous. I admit I'm nervous. I don't have nearly as much propane stocked in as I would like. Need to make sure the generator's ready to go. I hope I'm not right. I hope I'm absolutely wrong. But this creaky, rickety, miserable old coal-fired power grid probably isn't up to the task. You know, I checked in with our good friend Chris in Germany, and I asked her, I said, during the most brutal teeth of a German winter, how often do thousands of power lose? How many times in a winter do thousands of people lose electricity? Her answer, never. And it's probably minuscule enough to be statistically approaching never. So, if we lose power, I won't be here, and you have my humble apology on the front end, but the nature of our generator is such that it is not an inverter, and it does not provide smooth, clean, pure sine wave power, so I really can't run the studio with it. And besides that, we'll probably be trying to just run a couple of heaters anyway. Can't take a big load. So I apologize in advance. And I also, as we go out the door this evening, I want to thank you for joining in and putting up with my tardiness this evening. It seems like this week has been just sort of cursed. But a special thanks going out to our dear friend Cindy in the Great Northwest and Robert and Glenn, all of whom made our fundraising goal considerably more reachable. For this evening, you know, we started out with a $300 goal. For this evening, we now have $160 to go. And again, heading out the door, a $25 challenge coming in from our good friend Steve in New York. He will match the next $25 that comes in. Hopefully between now and overnight, we'll get caught up, and I hope we're here tomorrow. God, it would be nice to have solar panels. Jesus, it'd be nice. But that's where things stand. So I wanted to let you know, and thank you, and wish you all a very good evening. I hope you all stay warm, and, cross your fingers, and we'll be back for Friday on the front porch. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you. to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And yes, always, always, always. Wow, where'd that come from? Oh, okay. Always. Gina. It's all for you. Good night, y'all.